All righty. Well, this morning we'll continue in our Psalms summer series. And as you've heard quite a bit this morning, we will be in Psalm 139, if you have your Bible and you want to turn there. I chose it for a couple of reasons. Number one, it is by far my favorite psalm. The first time I started looking at it was right after Amanda and I were married, and it's a long story, but I accidentally ended up in a men's discipleship group that initially I wasn't supposed to be in. And it was six guys that met together once a week for 3 years. And this was a passage we spent a good amount of time in. And it's one that I actually return to a lot because I default toward theology and understanding and faith. And I know the things about God, and then I go out and I live according to those principles. Where I struggle is the abiding, the daily walking, the being more sensitive to where God is leading. And so to go out and right and wrong and get it done is great, but to left and right and more personally, just engage in the depth of relationship that's offered moment by moment is one that's a little tougher for me. And so Psalm 139 is great because it takes those big abstract ideas of God being all-knowing, all-present, all-powerful, and it shows how he uses those abstract, a little less relatable characteristics to turn and intentionally interact with and pursue and participate in each of our lives individually. So hopefully we'll get to unpack that together this morning. We're going to start in the first section of the passage, which is 1-4. And David just declares, "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thoughts from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down and are intimately acquainted with all of my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all." And so he starts with kind of a big summary statement that has two parts. He says, God, you searched me. You actively have taken part in turning your eyes toward me to sift and to look and to search within me. But then the second part is you actually arrive at knowledge. You know me because of your activity of looking into me. You know me. And then the next few verses kind of aren't specific areas that, oh, he knows this and he knows this, but they're just details to kind of give teeth to the fact that God searches you and knows you. And so the first one says, you know when I sit down and when I rise up. And you'll see a lot of these opposites throughout Psalm 139. And it's a technique called mirrorism, where you pick one end of the spectrum and the other end of the spectrum. And what it's meant to communicate is completeness or wholeness, everything in between. And so these are your behaviors, just your actions. Like when you sit down, when you rise up, God is in that. He knows what's going on. And then the next one, your thoughts, you understand my thoughts from afar. He's not just aware and searching and knowing what you're doing, but what's going on inside as well. He's actively a part of knowing what you're thinking about. And then the third one here, you scrutinize my path and my lying down. So when I go out in the morning and when I come back and lay down at the end of the evening. And so whatever your normal routine of life is, the way that you go through your day, God's scrutinizing that. His thought life is with you in that. He's searching in you throughout your day. And then he ends that with another summary statement. You are intimately acquainted with all of my ways. So if there's anything you didn't think that he's a part of and that he knows, he's there and it's intimately, it's personally. It's not searching and looking for fault or trying to disqualify, but it's drawing near relationally in all of your ways. When Amanda and I meet with couples who are gonna get married, we're doing pre-marriage counseling, we always tell them, like, you need to be a lifelong student of your spouse. You go get that high school diploma and then go get that bachelor's degree, master's degree, doctorate, postdoc. Never stop being fascinated with the person that you're getting married to. Because the truth is, we don't stay the same. You're not the same person today that you were yesterday, and you sure won't be the same person a year from now that you are today. And so that active interest, that active searching, that active knowing who are you now is what God engages with us, because he loves you. And it's not like you arrive at a knowledge of somebody and you go, check, I got that one. But it's that continual searching and knowing in your actions, in your days, in your thoughts, that he's searching you out and knowing you intimately. And then the last verse 4 here, before there's a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. If you really stop and think about that, like when you choose a word, when you communicate a word, there is so much that goes into that. Who's your audience? What's your context? What's your motivation? What are you trying to achieve with the word? How am I feeling right now? Like all of these go into the word that you choose to communicate. And yet David's saying that God knows it all. He knows all of it that's going into it before that word is even on your tongue. And so in his omniscience, in his ability to be all-knowing of everything out there, anywhere in the world, he turns it to know you personally, to take interest in you. And then the next section, he goes on and he says, you have enclosed me behind and before. You've laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too high. I can't attain it. So the commentaries kind of have two angles that you can take with this. Either David's feeling trapped. He's feeling like, man, God knows me so much. I'm feeling smothered. He's like, he's closing in on me. It's just too much. Or it's a celebration. It's a response of thankfulness, which is where I lean because of the way he ends in verse 6. But this God who knows you draws near to you and he encloses you behind and before and he lays your hand upon you. It's a sign of protection and provision. I don't know if you've ever been going through a hard time and all it takes is someone you love and you trust that you know has your best interest and they come and they just lay their hand upon you. And just the comfort and the peace that it brings to know that they're there, that they're with you. And so this God who knows you so personally and so intimately and in everything of your life chooses to draw near to you, to enclose you, to lay his hand upon you. And so when David thinks about that, he says, that's just too wonderful for me. I can't imagine that. It's too high. I can't attain it. I know personally, I spend a lot of my life projecting or posturing or like I want to be liked, I want to be respected, received. And so like to this person, I may show them this much. And to this person, I may show them this much. But God breaks through and he sees all of it. And so for me, I mean, how many relationships do we have where someone fully, completely, authentically, transparently knows everything about you and yet chooses to press in, chooses to come around you and lay their hand upon you? And when David thinks about that, he's like, man, that's incredible. That's amazing. That's almost just too much. I don't get it. And so we see in this second section that God chooses you just as you are, all that you are, and fully knowing it, he chooses you. I was thinking about one day I was scrolling through Facebook and you know, you see these ads for things and I'm a coach. I love sports all of my life. I've always been engaged in sports and anything that my kids will let me be involved in coaching them, I'm right there and I'm a part of it. And so as I'm scrolling Facebook, I come across this pitching net. And so it's the height of the strike zone and it's broken into 9 sections. So that as a pitcher, you can really work on your control of where you want your pitches to go. I'm like, oh, this looks pretty cool. And I'm scrolling down and it's like $18. I'm like, that's a steal. Like, there's no way. That's too good to be true. So I'm looking and reading. I'm like, you know, it's probably really cheaply made, but I can reinforce it. Like, I'm gonna go ahead. It's worth it to take a chance on it. So I buy it. And it comes and it's in a a smaller box than I anticipated, but that's okay, probably assembly required. And I open it. It's literally no taller than my knees. I'm like, this is to play baseball with your baby dolls. Like, it's ridiculous, right? And so I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, that's not at all what I expected. You know, I thought I knew what I was getting, but when I got close to it, when I got to put my hands on it, it was very disappointing. And I think sometimes we fear that in our relationships. Like, well, if you drew near enough to me, you'd find out I'm not really what you think I am. What we're seeing about God is he already fully knows everything, and then he's choosing to draw near, to lay his hands on you, to come around you. What an encouraging statement to know that the God of the universe, who knows you fully, isn't coming close and, oh, I'm surprised, I didn't know that thing about you, never mind. But in that full transparency, still chooses to come alongside you. So the next section, verse 7 through 12, it says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me and your right hand will lay hold of me. And so we see some more mirisms here. He starts by saying, okay, I know that there's nowhere that I can go to get away from you. In your omnipresence and the fact that your presence is everywhere all at the same time, you still specifically turn that and choose to be tangibly present with me. If I ascend to the highest highs in heaven, you're there. If I descend, if I make my bed down in Sheol, you're there, right? If it's morning, the wings of the dawn, you're there. Or the remotest part of the sea, you're still with me. There's literally nowhere, high, low, remote, distant, far away, early or late, you choose to always be present with me. Yesterday, my daughter had a volleyball tournament and we get home. And as soon as we walk in the door to the house, my oldest son, Caleb's like, hey dad, will you throw a bullpen with me? I got a new pitch I'm working on. And then my daughter's like, no, dad, my tournament, I missed a few serves. I'd really like you to help me work on nailing my serve. And then Judah, my youngest, he's like, dad, you're always with them. Like, can we play soccer or basketball or do something together? And as much as I would love to split into three and interact with all of them, I'm just limited. I'm like, all right, guys, take a number. Like, who's up, you know? But with God, that's not a limitation. He's with us. He's present with us. He's available to you at every moment, at any moment, no matter where you are in life. We just have to acknowledge it and turn and interact with him and walk with him. And so he closes out this section actually thinking, okay, so physically there's nowhere, time-wise there's nowhere. So what's the place that God wouldn't come to be with me? It's the darkness. It's the darkness, right? If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. And the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. I loved this statement in one of the commentaries I read. It says, even though God is opposed to darkness, God would turn the darkness into light in order to find his servant David. And so I was thinking about that. If we grabbed the brightness of the sun and we brought it into this room with us, and then we flipped the lights on and off, we'd have no idea if we're sitting in darkness or in light, because the brightness of the sun just overpowers that, superimposes. And so it takes the darkness and it turns it to light. And so whatever that darkness may be for you, whether you've made some choices that have drawn you further and further away from God and you think, man, I've turned my back on him for too long. There's no way he's gonna come meet me where I am. Or it's a sin struggle that you're just caught in some cycles of shame and you're feeling in a really bad, dark place. Man, I'm hopeless. I can't, I can't be redeemed from here. God's not going to meet me here. Or it's a thought life, depression. It's emotions you're feeling that are just heavy and feel dark. Even in the darkness, God's there with you, and he will turn the darkness and light are alike to him because he will turn it into light with his presence. There's nowhere that you can go that he won't be there with you. Because the God who's omnipresent all over the world all the time is with you. He chooses to be present in your life personally. So this next section is probably my favorite part of the entire psalm. We read it earlier during worship, but I personally struggle a little bit thinking I'm valuable just because of who I am. I often think my worth comes through what I can do for you or how beneficial I am to the people around me. And so this section just really makes me wrestle with who am I? Completely disconnected from anything I could do, where is my value found? And so it says, for you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. This speaks to God's omnipotence, his power. He's all powerful. He created the entire universe. And yet this says, he formed you in your mother's womb. He wove you. I love the idea of weaving because the intentionality it takes to intertwine, to weave two things together, it takes focus, it takes planning, it takes adjusting as you go. Not like an assembly line where it's like, oh, got that part, onto the next, got that part, onto the next. Literally, when Amanda and I first got married, we just needed income, so I went to a temp agency for work. So you get there really early, whatever jobs came in, they hand them out. Well, I got assigned to quality control at a McDonald's McMuffin factory in North Bryan. So I worked overnight and I stood at a conveyor belt and I watched the muffins come by. And the bad ones got knocked off. And when enough good ones filled a bag, you moved it and you watched more muffins go by. I'm not kidding. Like, that's a job. People do that. Or I think about making cookies. You know, it's just mass production. It's just scoop and plop and scoop and plop and scoop and plop. And they're all the same. And you throw them in the oven, they come out and you got cookies. Well, that's not the way you were created. You're not mass produced. You're woven. You were specifically formed in your mother's womb. And you can give thanks for who you are because the God of the universe created you, right? You are fearfully and wonderfully made. You were made to be respected and in awe of. You're wonderfully beautiful, majestic, because, man, God's works are wonderful. And you're one of his works. And deep down, David proclaims, my soul knows it very well. I can see it. The things you make are wonderful. And you've intentionally designed and fashioned and woven me. He goes on to say, my frame wasn't hidden from you. When I was made in the secret, I was skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth, and your eyes have seen my unformed substance. So reinforcing over and over, before anyone saw you, before any ultrasound put you weirdly on the screen, I was there. I saw you. I was forming you. I initiated and led and was a part of that process. And then he shifts to your days. It's not just you as a person that he directed his power toward, but all in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me when as yet there was not one of them. It reminds me of the Sermon on Mars Hill when Paul's preaching in Acts 17, and he says he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation. So God in his power knew the days of your life, had them written in his book, determined the time you would live on the earth and the boundaries of where you would live. And Paul goes on to say, why? Why was God so involved in that? That you would seek God and perhaps you would grope for him and find him, though he's not far off from each one of us. And so God in his all power knows the number of days you got, determined the time you're gonna live and the place you're gonna live so that you might seek for him and find him. So you might experience him. It's no accident that you are who you are, where you are, when you are. You're not just a boat drifting out at sea aimlessly and whatever comes my way. No, the God of the universe is powerfully engaged and involved in your life. And then the last part of this section is really cool. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would outnumber the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. The God of the universe is thinking about you constantly. I mean, when something's on my mind a lot and I'm thinking and I can't even sleep because it's there, it's because it's weighty. It's because it's important. Right? There was a baseball game last night and it was weighty and important in our family. I can't tell you all day long. My kids are like, hey, so 3 hours till game, 2 hours and 45 minutes till game. Yeah. Who do you think is going to play? What do you think it's like in Omaha? Is Jace's hamstring better? Is he going to DH or play in the field? What snacks can we have during the game? What do you think the score is going to be? Like just over and over and over because it was important to them. And God's thoughts of you outnumber the sand. And when you go to sleep and you wake up, he's still there with you, still thinking about you because you're weighty and you're important to him. So in this section, we see that God has a plan for you. He knows you, he chooses you, he's with you, and he has a plan for you. And so the last section is David's response to this big, awesome God that is so personal and intimate. And he says, oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, men of bloodshed, for they speak against you wickedly, and your enemies take your name in vain. And so David has these men who are threatening his life, who are attacking him. And he says, not only are they after me, God, but they're against you. They speak wickedly against you. They use your name in vain. And so David says, do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. They have become my enemies. And so this term for hate here is used for adversaries or opponents, things that you're gonna come against. And so David's saying, God, if you're so big and so powerful and all-knowing and present and you choose to be this personal and this active in my life, I'm gonna align with what you're about. I'm gonna stand up against, I'm gonna hate, I'm gonna be opposed to the things that are opposed to you because I wanna align with what you're about. And so we have that choice as we live, as we go out, like, God, you're so amazing, you're so personal, you're so involved, you're so powerful in my life. God, I wanna be about what you're about. I wanna stand up against what's against you and I wanna promote before what's in alignment with you. And then lastly, he says, search me, O God, and know my hearts. Try me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there be any hurtful way in me and lead me in the everlasting way. And so what does he do? He opens his hands and he says, God, you know me so well. You know me better than I know myself. So I invite you to search me deeply. What's anxious in me? What's hurtful in me? God, reveal that to me and then lead me in the everlasting way. Not that my mind would be on the things of the earth, but of the things above. Not that I would conform to the things that are going on in the world, but I'd be transformed by the renewing of my mind as you reveal to me what in my life is not eternal. What in my life is not according to the everlasting. And then he's willing to follow. He's like, lead me, show me, reveal it to me. So What does he do? He aligns with God, with his life, and he draws near to him and invites him into revealing what's going on inside of him that maybe he's not even aware of. So my hope for us this morning is, number one, you realize your value. Like, I hope right now you feel so much more valuable and purposeful than you did when you walked in, because you realize some amazing truths about the God who's all-knowing, who's all-present, who's all-powerful, and the way that he takes those a little bit unrelatable characteristics and turns them like a spotlight directly onto you personally. And then number two, I ask that we find a way to remind ourselves of that. Like, there's so many things in the world that are telling us the opposite. I'm not good enough as a parent. I'm not good enough as a student. I'm not good enough as an athlete. I'm not good enough. Over and over and over, there's things that show us where we fall short. But there aren't a whole lot of things in our life reminding us these truths. But God knows you, and he's with you, and he chooses you, and he personally designed you, and he thinks about you constantly. So whether it's, maybe there's a bracelet you wear that every time you see it, you remind yourself. Maybe you set an alarm on your phone for every 30 minutes or every 60 minutes just to, like, give you that buzz in your pocket. Hey, don't forget that God is active in your life. And then a lot of times, you know, that's where I end. I'm like, oh, good, I got the truth. I remind myself of truth. Now I'll go live. I got this, God. And so lastly, let's be intentional, engage in the relationship. Not just go out and live the right and wrongs, but really, as we get buzzed, as we see that bracelet, say, God, where are you guiding me? Where are you leading me? What do you have for me right now? And we walk with him, and we enjoy his presence, and we enjoy the intentionality and get to be revealed of what he thinks about us and what he has for us. And then lastly, man, just starting each day truly open-handed before the Lord, asking him to show us what we don't even know about ourselves. God, what is that thing I should start doing that I've been avoiding? What's that thing I should stop doing that I've been doing? Who do I need to forgive? Who do I need to ask forgiveness of? Community is huge, because when I'm around people who know me well, they often can see when something's wrong off in me before I know it. You know, I have a buddy who's, he'll come up and say, hey, the way you treated Amanda was just not cool. Are you all right? Is something going on? No, I'm good. You should probably think and pray about that, because I don't think you are. And then we got the God of the universe, who knows us even more deeply than anyone, who can bring those things to light. And then in our willingness to follow where he leads, that our life will become more and more about things everlasting, things that last forever, and not just things that are temporal. So what I want to do is I want to make some space for that this morning. Not a long time, but 2 minutes, 120 seconds. I just want you right now, before we even walk out of this place, to just put yourself before the Lord and go, God, I believe you love me. I believe you've enclosed me. I believe you choose me. You've designed and created me. You're with me. You have a plan for me. So God, reveal to me what I don't know. And then have the courage to tell him, whatever it is, I'll follow after you. You lead me and I'll follow after you. And then at the end of those 2 minutes, the worship team is going to come on, and we're going to just respond to that and reflect in the goodness and the value and the preciousness that we have in this access to a relationship with such a big and loving God. So let me pray, and then we'll go into our time before the Lord. Father, we love you. We thank you that of these truths that are so easy to forget, that you're a God that is so holy and set apart and different, and yet specific and intentional, personal, intimately involved with who we are. So we sit before you. Have your way with us. Help us remember these truths and walk closely, relationally, in a trusting, dependent relationship with you. Jesus' name, amen.